What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot with myself, Robbie the Wagner, and my co-host, Trey.
Wrote a song about it. Want to hear it? Here you go. My blues name, Trey.
Also known as Charles William Carpenter III.
Yeah. I only let my friends call me Trey, so Robbie, let's keep that out your mouth.
Okay. All right. Let's jump right into some whiskey. Tell us about it.
Yes. Okay, folks. Today's contestants are... So, we're having Sazerac Rye by Buffalo Trace. Most people consider this the insider's nickname for it is the Baby Saz, because there is a more aged antiques collection version of it. This is 90 proof. It's tried and true and very popular. We don't get to know the mash bill, but it used to be known as like the 6 year. I obviously can't confirm that because it's not age stated on the bottle itself, but most people know it as like a 6 year rye.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cheap, I think.
So it's usually around the $30 range. There was a little while where it was hard to find, and then like whiskey places started getting ridiculous and trying to push it more to $50. But I believe it's in the $30 to $35 as like retail.
I think I paid $25, maybe.
That's
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, Virginia doesn't allow those extra taxes on there, or who knows?
I don't know.
That's more. Sometimes it's the plus of the ABC.
Yeah,
which is as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That is true.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, maybe this is reflective of last episode.
Not getting a lot from it.
I'm getting a little orange, but like orange, like a liqueur, like an orange liqueur, kind of.
My nose just isn't working.
Hmm. I netted today, so, like, you know, hopefully I cleared that out and got what I need. Hmm. A little spicy.
Hmm. I smell a new Vuori shirt.
Fiore.
See.
Without going too far. See, Fiore. No, I was listening to an episode of Smartless today, and they were doing a Fiore commercial, and Jason Bateman is doing it in a like Eastern European / Italian accent. This is a Fiore.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, and so I was like, oh, I should take that. Will they sponsor us? I mean, we're OG.
Yeah, probably not.
All right, let's get back to this whiskey first, because this is a lot of whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm still just getting like more of an orange liqueur to it. Maybe a slate pepper. I don't know. I'm going to taste it.
Yeah. Grand Marnier a little bit.
Yeah. It's pretty mild. I'm still feeling a little of that orange liqueur to it. I'm getting a little pepper in the beginning, and then the finish has just kind of a woodiness to it.
Yeah.
Not like spice like a normal rye.
I'm getting notes of... Maybe it's like vanilla. I want to say like a white chocolate Kit Kat is like what it tastes like.
Okay. That's very sweet.
Yeah.
White chocolate includes no actual chocolate. Fun fact, everyone.
Well, it's made from chocolate, but they take all of the like, strip all of the chocolatey bits out. So
I was always told it was just a straight sugar confection and there is no chocolate in there.
No, because I've looked this up.
Oh, okay.
It is a, it's like a chocolate alcohol or something. Like it comes out of the chocolate, but they take the same way that they make like white bread and they take all the bread stuff out.
Right.
They do the same with like the chocolate.
Yeah. It's weird. I love Wonder Bread, but not so much white chocolate. Zero Bar, you know, is interesting, but I can't have too much of that. I don't change my opinions or distinctions on this. So typically I actually like this as a pretty decent cocktail whiskey or a cocktail rye.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making an actual Sazerac with like the spray of absinthe or the essence of absinthe and all of that, like this is a good one for that. That's usually probably how I have it. I don't think I have it straight very much. So it's fine. It lacks a lot of diversity. With each drink, I'm not really getting anything new out of it. In fact, it probably even softens more. The only thing that increases is the slight burn in my throat. But that's as you run alcohol over and over your throat. That can happen. So, okay. I actually would think about it like independently on its own as like a sipping whiskey. I'd probably give this a 4. It's not bad, but it's not that interesting. And let's say it's $5 more than Rittenhouse or something. Maybe I wouldn't get it. I definitely wouldn't buy this over straight Buffalo Trace for a sipping whiskey.
Yeah, I'm going to go a step further and give it a 3. Like, to me, 1s and 2s are reserved for, like, I really wouldn't get it ever again kind of numbers. 3, I'm saying, is like, you know, I'd drink it, but it's like, I'm never going to seek it out. It doesn't interest me. It's a little bit too low proof. It's a little bit not spicy because it's low rye. It's like, it's just all around like not great for me. Maybe if you're not a big rye fan, you might like it, but.
Yeah, if you're not really into rye and you're coming from the bourbon world, I can see this as an easy transition. But dear listener, just so you know, we shall be trying other bottom shelf whiskeys, at least one of the rye that I know of. And so we'll have a little compare and contrast in that realm.
Yeah, we may even have to find some plastic bottle ones just to be extra bad.
Now, when I crossed over my 40s, I made a promise to myself for most reasons that I was just never going to have. Like, life is too short. Somebody said to me recently, what, life is too short to have bad booze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that even if you're like, you know, you're on a low budget, you're not in plastic bottle budget.
No. Like, you literally have to have zero money to your name to be like, let me scrape together $5 and like get this little plastic bottle.
Or a home, and this plastic bottle shall reside within a paper bag. Mm-hmm. Like, those have to be the circumstances where I'm not sure I can go back there again. But, you know, time will tell, I guess.
All right. So today for our tech / web / whatever we want to call it, we're going to talk a little bit about building custom things versus using what the browser gives you natively. So this was top of mind for me recently because I've been doing a lot with date time pickers in the app that I work on for work. And there's one that's like, I get a little bit confused on how it's structured, honestly, because there's a lot of stuff going on there. But this time picker specifically, there's no dates to it. It's just like a drop down of times, right? And one, I'm curious, like, why is this different than just a drop down in general, right? You know, well, how is a time really that different than just any kind of select? So that's weird. And then it also does like some stuff where it has an input, but then also like a drop down. And then inside of that, there's like an unordered list with a ordered list, or no, LIs, and inside of those are buttons. So it's like a really weird, like, why are none of these selects or like the things I would expect? And then it goes a step further, and like they try to make it both support like typing what you want in the input and then selecting that in the list.
Yeah.
And like clicking what you want. And so there's some weird stuff of like when you hover one of them, it like says, is hovering this one kind of behind the scenes. And I'm like, why does it do that? Because there's a click handler on each one of them that when you click it, selects it.
Right.
And there's also like normal HTML behavior of arrow or tab through it and like hit enter, and that will call the click handler. So it's very confusing to me.
It sounds over engineered, but perhaps, yeah, that's,
yeah.
And or there was some crazy user requirement that came into play. But yeah, I think like you boil it down at the end of the day. Well, see, now you brought it up. See, when you said like date pickers, I was like, yeah, native date pickers. Like, why would you not use the native one?
Yeah, I want to go into that as well. But I was just setting the stage of what I've been dealing with specifically.
Yeah. Is there time? There's no like native time thing, right? There's no like.
I'm not sure. There is like this is an in-between, right? Of like. First, I would argue you should never write your own date picker, full stop.
Right.
Or time picker, because like there are, usually they're kind of both included in some of the vanilla libraries, like flat picker or whatever.
Right, right. Okay, well, yeah, that's a different step, right? Like reinventing the wheel, because there's been a lot of people like solve it pretty well. So
yeah,
unless you have a personal challenge that you're trying to get through, like, A, I would advocate to do that in a non-production situation, right? Because it's not battle tested. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think you're always originally looking at what does a browser provide me for free, and why isn't that good enough? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not for some reason. Like, I know that there are nuances, like say there's a time and they want an input there so that you can filter down or something. I don't know. Let's just say that you can filter down and it's not there in the browser. Okay, maybe that's one thing. But if it's purely visual, then like that's one big challenge, I think. Like we have to create a custom thing to meet this design.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a bad use case. Now we have to create this custom thing because we've determined a shortcoming in either the library or the native functionality for whatever reason for our users. Perhaps those are the use cases. But I'd even say in that case, you probably still are never starting from zero, right? You should just be leveraging what's on there and progressively enhance. Remember those, like progressive enhancement? What is the base thing? And then add to that. I'd say that that's the... But most of the time when I've experienced this, it's usually based on visual requirements.
Yeah, I think some of that. And I think sometimes it's a... like the person who wrote it doesn't understand the way native HTML works.
Mm-hmm.
So like they didn't understand, like for that time picker, that if you made it selects with options, it would just kind of, you know, be accessible, keyboard accessible. I don't have to write my own handle key down stuff.
Yeah.
Like that gets you most of the way there, in my opinion. And then the glue would be, like when you type in the input and it's supposed to select one of those things, then you could do the actual, like, I think there's some kind of method that's like actually select the thing. I don't often do it, so I forget what it is. But, you know, if you have a select and you use JavaScript on it to grab it, I think you can say like select this one.
Right.
So that's what I would do when someone like types in and it's close to one. I'd be like select this or whatever. So it's weird that there's all that going on and like needing to also put buttons inside of a thing that should be like options is weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the worst thing I've ever seen. Like I mentioned the worst one before where it was like, because people didn't know if you wrapped a label around of input and you clicked the label, it would focus it. They like wrote custom JavaScript to do that. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like the root causes are either a failure to fully understand HTML or a failure of product to like design with HTML in mind. And they have specific things that they say you must do. And you're like, well, you know, we could be 90% of the way to what you say it should look like if we use native stuff. Like, can we change it a little? I would say is what people should do. Like push back on that. Or back to what I was saying is like, just don't write your own. Like the browser gives you a lot of good stuff, especially for if you need like the calendar style date picker that's built into everything now, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think Safari is maybe like behind a flag or like not quite there or something. But
who uses that anyway? Safari is the new Internet Explorer.
It really is.
It really has become that.
They come out of the gate with like, they'll implement something crazy that like no one else has done yet to be like, look, we did this first, but then they don't have like basic support for basic stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The priorities around that are interesting. So for whatever reason, but I definitely have found that to be the case. And it's interesting if you're doing any mobile stuff when you're kind of trapped in mobile Safari world too, or, you know, just your site or your application on mobile too can get a little like, ugh, I really wish iPhone didn't make this the default all the time.
Yeah. Although mobile stuff does have really nice native date pickers and time pickers.
It does. Yeah. Like out of the gate, they did that right, which was nice, which is why with progressive web app days of things, I think people still do that. I don't know. But like you wanted to lean on more native things because in the phone, it was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like whenever you opt out of that stuff, you get really weird stuff. People, you know, go to pick a date and you have this thing that looks like it should be on a desktop. And people are like, what is this? Like,
yeah,
this doesn't feel right. Which like flat picker on mobile just disappears.
Mm.
It just uses the like native stuff. But on desktop, it uses like, okay, I know these look and perform like shit. So just like,
yeah,
let's do the nice ones.
Right. I'm trying to make it consistent across browsers still in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like crazy that there are those bridges at this point. Like those wars are over. Can we just...
Yeah. Chromium won. And now people are doing cool things on top of Chromium.
Exactly.
Arc is really nice. And
yeah. Brave browser was cool with some of its privacy things and stuff, being really considerate in those ways. Like, yeah, I think a lot of these were doing interesting things. So I think really at the end of the day, what we're talking about is continually like learn about and reference the information of the base tools that you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go to the MDN docs all the time. Even sometimes when I know, like, yeah, this is what I do and this is what I know, I'm just going to kind of take a look real quick and see, are there some new methods or some different examples, perhaps, like, you know, some things I haven't seen yet. So let's dive into that. Like, my whole example into this, it was a circumstance where you're given an accordion layout and you're given a HTML doc with a bunch of divs and asked to like create this accordion. And it's like, well, no, you don't really need that. Like, there's a couple of different ways to like look at this. And you've got like the whole definition list, because you mentioned like unordered list and ordered list and things like that for more semantic things. And then there's the details element, which has a summary element within, and then everything after the summary is the information. And you can structure that however you want. It's like pretty nice, actually. And by default, it hides everything below the summary, unless you, and you can like start it with an open property, and then the first one is open. This is all just HTML. You get all this magic. You get a basically an accordion all together, like right out of the box. It's really nice. And, you know, trying to force that because of some arbitrary design rules or just an, maybe you're not familiar with it and you're going down this other path. Well, like, you know, HTML is not sedentary. It's still an actively developed standard. And like, look at some of those basics before you start going down this other path. Oh yeah, 4 years ago, I had to build an accordion and I did, you know, I built accordions in jQuery and then jQuery UI at some point, and then, you know, React components and everything else in the middle. But like, basically, all of those things aside, you can be completely agnostic to that, and every browser will do it this way and give you an accordion if you just write the HTML and content. So why aren't we doing that?
I don't know. I do think a lot of that one is probably design stuff of like, so I've actually not used that myself. So is it, can you do animations? Like, can you make it kind of like grow open, or does it just pop open?
Yeah, it just pops natively. Now, I believe you can do transition animations with it because of that. Basically, when it's transitioning from open true and open false, mm-hmm. you can attach to that and then do some animations there.
Yeah.
I haven't done that. I mean, that would be a little sugar on top for some niceness, but I'm pretty sure you can transition it.
Yeah. I would guess that someone has come up with a smart way to do that. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of cool stuff happening that hopefully is going to get us to where we don't need a lot of this custom crap. Because, like, you know, the whole view, is it view transitions? Is that what they landed on for when you, like, go to a, from one page to another in a not spa and you want to, like, animate from a thing?
Yeah, I think so. You want to like control that transition from one document to a new document, right? Like, or mm-hmm. URL or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I believe that's what it is.
So like, if that's going to be possible, I would think everything else natively should be animatable. Is that a word? Animatable?
Onomatopoeia?
Should be able to be animated?
Yes. I think that's probably more correct. Onomatopoeia.
Whiskey Web and Whatnot is brought to you by EmberConf. EmberConf is back in person this year in Portland for a special celebration of 10 years since the 1.0 release of Ember. Been a long time. There are lots of great talks, as always, but I'm particularly excited about one Walk the Line convention in country music and development. That just sounds like a really interesting talk, linking those two things together. And I'm, of course, excited for whatever magic Ed Faulkner drops in his keynote. Always fun stuff there. This year, the workshops are a little different, and they'll be included at no extra cost in a 2-hour block during the second day of the conference. There's a lot of cool options there. There's a deep dive into building V2 add-ons, an intro to animations in Ember, and of course, a live recording of this podcast. That's right, Whiskey Web and Whatnot will be live at EmberConf recording an episode in person. So if you're a fan, we would love to see you there. Space is limited for all of the workshops, so register soon to make sure you get space in your preferred one. I'm definitely excited to be back in person this year and hope to see Ember friends new and old in Portland July 20th to 21st for one of the best conferences in the business. Get your tickets now at emberconf.com.
So, like, you know, I'm I'm very optimistic for all the new things coming out and people kind of just realizing they can delete, you know, I don't need to include all of Bootstrap just to use like this accordion or just to have like a nav bar that collapses when I like have a smaller screen or whatever. Like,
yeah,
it should be very easy to use like minimal CSS and like make that work with just normal HTML.
Yeah. First of all, I can't believe you said that dirty word, Bootstrap. I don't know why.
It's similar to like WordPress and that everyone in like the JavaScript hip, cool, like let's use the latest JavaScript thing is like, oh, I hate that. That's so old and crappy and whatever. Yeah. And if you use that, you suck. But 70% of the web runs on it or whatever. Like, you know, I think a lot of people still use all these things. And if it is working for you, why not? Like,
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, I guess... I think when I started hating Bootstrap is when everything started to look like Bootstrap, right? That's really the problem I had with it, is it became so popular and these like default themes were basically everywhere because it, you know, it did speed you up. It did quickly help you create features that people eventually agreed on that visually were appealing. And that was good at first. I was a user and advocate for it for a while. But then when I started just seeing it everywhere, I was like, oh, I'm so tired of this.
Yeah.
And Material suffers from the same thing because it eventually everything looked like a Google product. Every startup was the same bullshit stuff. And the, you know, the decisions they made were good kind of at the time, but then eventually you just got tired of always seeing it. And I do wonder if Tailwind will suffer a similar fate or issue, right? Like,
yeah,
they've created this pay for pre-done library of things where you can quickly do all this stuff, but again, people are going to take that ease and not necessarily add in their own creative license, and then what, everything starts to look like Tailwind could be the same, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think it won't be as bad. So like, I used to use Bootstrap a good bit. I think as things started being like that, where like 90% of the sites looked the same, I moved slightly different to Foundation. I don't know if you ever used Foundation.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I remember it kind of. I don't know if I did.
It was very similar, but it was like a little more square. Like Bootstrap really leaned into all the border radius and like all of that stuff. And like Foundation was like more like getting into the flat design phase and being kind of square. So it was just a little bit different and I would use that. And it was like, it used SAS before Bootstrap did, I think. And I really liked SCSS versus like, I guess Bootstrap was plain CSS. I don't remember if they shipped some less stuff before that, before they did SAS as well. But
yeah,
everybody uses SAS now.
Do they? I don't know. Is that still a thing? Is it just, I thought enough spec.
What, SAS?
Yeah, I thought enough spec was... You can do nested stuff now and like,
well,
and I thought everything moved to like post CSS and I don't know.
So a lot of stuff, you know, if you're building apps has gone to post CSS, but like if you're consuming Bootstrap, the way to override stuff easily is to use like SAS and SAS variables. And then you can use all of their partial SAS files and be like, I just want to include navbar or I just want to include whatever. And I'm not going to include all of Bootstrap.
Okay.
So people use it for that. But to circle back to what you were saying about Tailwind, like I think the problem is with those older things, like until they started piecemealing them like that. And then kind of they've also started doing some utilities and things like Tailwind has. But before it was like navbar looks like a navbar and it's got 500 lines of styles. And if you want to change it, you got to go in and check all of those lines and like, you know, figure out what you want to get rid of and like tweak a little bit and make sure you get all of them because there might be like five media queries that are like, you know, all of these things. And then you might miss one. And then in certain like screen sizes, the things you overrode weren't overridden. And it was just like, it was a mess. So like with Tailwind, it doesn't give you a bunch of like black box styles. It gives you, or Tailwind UI to be specific, they give you like markup and it has the classes and whatever. And so one, if you're not using React or Vue, which I'm frequently not, they don't include any of the JavaScript for it. So you have to like figure out how you're going to add and remove these classes to animate and stuff. And so you're already building some of that custom. And while I'm doing that, I'm deleting some of the crap they have that I don't need or whatever. So it's like more of a starting point that I can customize easily versus this thing where like in Bootstrap, you wouldn't even see most of the code. It was just coming from like NPM or Bower, I guess, at the time.
Right. Yes. Bower.
Yeah. So like, I think, on the one hand, yes, a lot of people are using Tailwind UI and using it differently than I would, using like they have the full website template of like, this is a marketing site.
Yeah.
And people will like copy the whole marketing site and just change the text. Whereas I use like, okay, I need a couple of these elements just because I don't want to build it all myself. And I'll just like sprinkle it into whatever. So I think like 20% of the sites using Tailwind probably are doing that, like copy and paste everything, which gives you a little of that. Like sometimes you'll stumble upon a new startup and be like, oh, they're using Tailwind UI. It's clear. But, you know, I think a lot of sites are using Tailwind and you wouldn't know.
Interesting. Yeah. I've definitely seen some of the former though, like some new releases and like three different sites are exactly the same with different texts. And you're like, okay, guys, come on. I know you paid your $300 or whatever Adam's charging these days, but
it keeps going up and keeps being charging you more. Cause it's like, I don't know how it's changed, but we had the like forever team license and then something changed to where they were like,
yeah,
oh yeah. But like these new like templates don't count. And it somehow in a forever license aren't included.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, whatever your new thing is, here's another $200 so I can get all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that they're creating more value and, you know, they got you in for the initial things that you said, I want to have for that value. And there it is in perpetuity. If you want more value, it's going to cost more because we worked more. They're not necessarily refactoring the original thing. So, you know, there's that to consider. There's nothing wrong with the hustle to a degree, for sure.
They do have a really nice podcast website that I don't think I've actually seen anyone use. And I mean, I'm sure someone is using it, right? Of course. But like,
you want to be the first.
The ones that I listen to are not. And I am thinking about if I ever have more than a couple minutes of time again in my life, that I will build us a site that's very similar to that. Cause it's nice and clean and it's just a little fresher than the kind of out of the box canned site we have now.
Right. Yeah. No, and I can dig that. Oh, Transmit. There you go. I'm going to look at it right now. So I was just curious. Yeah, this looks cool. It's Next.js though.
Yeah.
Of course. And
that's fine. As long as all I have to do is click like make me a site and then I change like a couple things, I can do Next.js. Like once when the plumbing is there and I'm changing HTML and then doing like one API call to get our podcast.
No, it's not a problem.
I can handle React. It's fine.
Yeah, but you've got to know Next.js specifically. So are you going to do it? So that thing you probably, I mean, you can make that one page server-side render and everything else is static generated. You could make it static and then create a whole client thing and utilize like the data fetch through an API route or something if you want, depending. There's a lot of things we could do there, actually. We could probably create a cron job that gets our podcasts, you know, runs every night, gets the latest podcasts, and then static generate it.
To avoid the API calls later, yeah.
And you can do crons in Vercel, I believe. I don't know.
Well, it only has to run every Thursday.
Until Guillermo comes on this podcast and drinks that whiskey we sent him with us, I refuse to promote. So we'll see how we can do this on Netlify.
Yeah. Oh, I'm never going to use Vercel. You already know. But I don't dislike Next.js. I think that, let me take a step back here. Guillermo has built a lot of cool shit. And I've used a lot of that cool shit. But, you know, there's a little bit of me now that's like, you know, obviously you're using all of this just to make money. And like, Vercel is very locked in and like, I'm not into that. Like Netlify, I feel like is the altruistic one of the two. They're paying all these people to do like Ryan, they're paying to do Solid. And like, you know, everybody is just like, I think they're doing that with like four or five different like frameworks or people that are big. And like
they are. Yeah. And they're obviously seeing how it can be best leveraged on their platform, but not necessarily driving that. And I am going to play devil's advocate a little bit here just because I think that's more fun regardless. So, you know, who's to say that's not exactly what Vercel is doing with like Rich Harris, for example, right? He's getting to continue to work on Svelte and improve it independently of its integrations with Vercel. So, I mean, that's altruistic to a degree. They are also supporting open source contributors by hiring them all, the ones that Netlify doesn't hire. And, you know, but I want to give him a little grace in the sense that, like, he is not beholden to us in any way. We are simply developers in the community that have used his products. And he has VCs that he's taken a bunch of money from.
Yeah. I just think it's more of a like public attitude of like Vercel thinks they're this like hot shit. Like we're basically Apple for frameworks. And like,
I get that.
We're the best. And like Netlify's like, hey, you know, we're just trying to give everybody nice sites. And like, we want to work with everything. And yeah, of course we want to make money because that's what everyone wants. But like, it just feels better to use Netlify.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, Next is created to work best on Vercel, which is interesting when you think about it, because Vercel is essentially sugar and ease over top of AWS. And you've got things.
So is Netlify.
Right, it is. And then you've got, though, I was going to reference, there's OpenNext. Have you heard of that package? Which essentially makes it easier to deploy Next.js directly into like serverless AWS Lambdas and stuff like that. And this is by the guys at who do the SST library. And they're the C.run guys who created SST, which essentially is like, it's a wrapper around AWS CDK. And I don't want to simplify it in that same way. We should get somebody on this to like talk to us about it. But
yeah, for sure.
Because I was OG with that. And because it's like a wrapper there, but there's a bunch of extra sugar and extension to it as well that makes like setting up what you need for deployments like super easy and all in code and all of that kind of stuff. And we use it. Maybe you don't realize that. We use it for our serverless API for Swatch. I use SST for that setup and deployments and all that stuff too. So they're saying Next is good. And we're saying that like there's some keys that are locked here for normal folks. And we want to give you within the deployment story the ability to unlock those keys and put it right on the place it's going anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think Vercel is not necessarily going to stand in the way of anything like that. They're just saying like we have these custom adapters and whatever that like make things, you know, potentially much faster, much better, whatever. And like, we're not going to tell you the secret sauce. So like, if you happen to figure out this, it's like jailbreaking an iPhone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people can reverse engineer it and get it to work. And like, then in the next version, they patch all those holes where the people use to do stuff. And then like,
you keep going,
you do the dance.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe that's it. Here's the thing. Maybe that was how it all started, right? Creating a meta framework for AWS, and Guillermo found some ways to make it work really well, make it fast, make it so cheap. And he's like, there's the key. I can do this and put a site up and on here and make it so cheap. Why don't I just like add margin to that and go ahead and create the interface to do it automatically for you, right? Like you can deploy a site super. I forget what it was called before. It was something before Vercel. I feel like it began with a Z. I remember having it.
Yeah, Zeit.
Zeit. That was it. Yeah, Zeit and Vite. Maybe it was like too close.
And they had like Zeit.now or,
yeah,
or something like that. You could like, I would deploy stuff to that because there was just a CLI command. Like all the stuff that Guillermo did before it was like officially Vercel and they had like a pile of investor money.
Right.
Was like really cool. Like I used all of it. I liked using Hyper. I feel like at his core, he still likes to do all these little hackery things and just ship them out.
Yeah.
And it's just less often now because obviously he has bigger priorities. But that side of him, I love. I just feel like,
yeah,
I feel a little hurt that he decided not to come on the podcast, to be honest.
To just ghost us. Yeah. Like, yeah, just ghost us completely is like kind of rude, especially like,
yeah,
No, we didn't spend a lot of money, but we spent some money and sent him whiskey. And,
yeah,
you know, it's sort of like just say no thank you, or, you know, just say,
yeah,
figure it out at this point. Like, just don't ghost.
Or give us a real reason. Like, don't just say, hey, I've decided not to. Like, maybe you had someone research it and, like, you listened to one of the episodes where I said React is shit and you went,
nope.
Oh, our whole business is React. These guys are going to attack mm-hmm. me. But, like, that's not what we want. Like, I like a lot of your stuff. So,
yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
So that's out in the ether now.
Yeah. I mean, we've danced around it a few times, so I just wanted to address it officially.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable and still very technology-based. I mean, if we were real devs, we'd be arguing on Twitter about it. So
that's true. Or finding someone who already said something about it and then retweeting that but changing like one word. That's the real thing to do.
Mm, you certainly haven't had any tweets that are at all like that.
There was one... like Fred from Astro, he was like
the baseline, yeah.
Yeah, it was like
Node.js isn't the
Node.js is not the
standard or not the goal.
Not the goal, it's the baseline. Yeah. So then Theo was like, zero CSS is not the goal, it's the baseline. And I was like, well, okay, if you've written nothing, zero HTML is not the goal, it's the baseline. Like
how many responses did you get to that? 10,000, 20,000?
Yeah. I mean, none. I just felt like doing it. So,
yeah.
It's weird. Like, I think my profile is a little bit not shadow banned, but like deprioritized.
Mm-hmm.
And like stuff that I post never gets seen. But like, if I had posted that as like a comment in the thread of like hundreds of people would like that.
Of someone.
So it's like,
yeah.
Okay, well, I know people are seeing my stuff occasionally then. I just have to figure out where and how.
But they're not seeing our subscribers, maybe aren't even seeing it. So it's hard to say where that's coming from. I don't know.
Yeah.
I looked through the Twitter code with a lot of other people.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't think it's reflective of what is happening today. You know, it's a snapshot. Things are moving fast there.
Yeah.
But then, like, conversely, you know, I still don't really grok exactly what would put me in someone else's thread. You know, even following, you look at the following tab and who knows. I also paid for Twitter Blue because I saw you're doing it, so I paid for that like 2 weeks ago. I still don't have a check mark.
They come and go.
I should be reaping the benefits.
It's weird. Like, so I changed my handle to Robbie the Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like weeks after that when they gave me my check mark back.
Mm.
And I just changed the podcast like picture and like I think some description stuff or something. And we lost our check mark there too. Like, it's basically if you change anything, they think maybe like, oh, someone could have hacked this or something and like changed it to something weird.
It's got to go into a queue. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some weird stuff there. But like also people have been doing tests of like, oh, okay, I'm going to pay for Twitter Blue for a while and like post a couple of things. Then I'm going to not, and I'm going to see what my engagement is like.
Yep.
And it doesn't really seem to make any difference. So like the whole promise of your things are going to be like prioritized because you paid is like,
well, they need the money first before they can afford to like build it in. So,
well, some of that was like the For You tab, which I think is even gone now.
No, it's there. For me, it's there.
Let me look.
Yeah, let's look at it now. We have computers.
Well, I'm looking on my phone because that's where, yeah, okay, so there's For You. There were three tabs before, though. There was like For You, Following, and something else. I don't know. But it was like the whole promise. Oh, no, no, it was Verified. Like there was For You, Verified, and Following. And like the whole promise was like the one that was going to be featured most was like the Verified. So that you could like only see people with Twitter Blue and until you went to another tab.
Okay.
And that was like, I was like, okay, that's worth paying for. And then, yeah, it just... That seems to be gone unless I feel like every time I open the app, it's different. So I don't know. Like,
it's possible. I'm a little bummed that the Doge went away.
Mm.
I thought that was like funny. Not that I own any Doge anymore, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you sold it, but I have a lot of Shiba Inu.
Yeah, I have a lot because it's like worth fucking nothing the last time I looked because you encouraged me to buy it and then it's like hot garbage and I might as well just keep all my garbage until it's worth something, at least what I paid, you know?
Yeah. Well, all of crypto is garbage right now.
All like, of finance is garbage.
It used to have a lot of really big, like, swings up, and now it's just like, you know, it's the same as the stock market, like 5% up, 5% down, 5% up, 5% down.
Yeah. Bitcoin has had a nice surge or whatever, and I thought about, mm-hmm. like, what if I just bought one when it was, like, 15 grand? I was like, ugh, what if I just bought one and doubled my money? Like, that's a good thing. I was like, I just, no, I can't. Because I don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I did with Shiba Inu is like, you know, I got to pick one of them. It's probably not going to be the winner, but like if I buy 600 million of these and they go up to like 1 cent one day, hey, that's a lot of money. Like, but like I never believed in Bitcoin. I was like every time, like I used to use it, I would buy like a few of them at a time when they were like $50 or something. And then like it would go up to maybe 100 and then back down to 50 or like wasn't like life-changing money. So I was like, let me just gamble all of these. Like I would do Bitcoin blackjack all the time and like all of that stuff. And then like, yeah, if I had just not done anything with that and just kept a few, like would have been nice.
I think the concept inherently is good and well-meaning, but the problem is it takes like trust and uptake outside of people just trying to like make a buck. And there's so much of this make a buck out there. This is the problem, is that like these people are like pumping it because they want to make a buck. They want you to get in and they want all the money to get in so that they can like drop out and continue to pay for their nomadic lifestyle in Dubai or whatever. I don't know. It's just like, that's not the intent. You believe in this idea, but it's not because you have sold this non-security for 50 grand, 50 imaginary $1,000. Like, you know, that's not what it was for. It was like saying currency inherently is flawed and based on some trust that's been taken advantage of. And we're looking at how technology can fix that. That's it. That's like blockchain in general, right? Like putting things in and having like stronger security and like no longer, like let's take digitizing paper one more step.
Yeah. I mean, I think the technology at some point in our lives is going to be like have a real use and, you know, have a few coins that are probably like stable coins are usually pretty stable. However, when they're not, that's a good time to buy a lot of, like, I never really knew how they worked, but it's like a stable coin basically has like usually a few different coins or whatever that back it. And they just like mint more of those to like make sure that it's like they have enough in the bank to make sure like a, you know, USD coin is always $1.
Right.
And so when that like flips and like the other coins are tanking, it will make the stable coin drop to like, you know, a couple cents or something.
Right.
And if you buy a ton of it, then you know it's going to come back to a dollar later. Or if you buy a bunch of the things that it that like back it up, usually they're like very free. So I think that's the way to make money now is wait for one of those weird events.
Probably.
Because I've tried buying a few coins here and there and like none of them move at all. It's crazy.
Yeah. I've had Ethereum a couple of different times and definitely could have done significantly better. So,
well, the nice thing with Ethereum is like it is really the thing backing most coins because people just build on top of Ethereum.
Yeah.
So if you buy Ethereum, you know, like people are using it everywhere for these things. So like it's not going anywhere. But yeah, I don't understand why it's not going up in value.
I don't either. Yeah, because again, it's kind of like the stock market in a way. And I know that that has like protections to it, but a lot of it is about like customer sentiment, right? Like a lot of it is about like trust and sentiment.
Yeah.
And that's a very flawed system too, to begin with. Like, I don't know, investments in general kind of throw me awry because there's a bunch of math involved. But at the end of the day, it's about how do people that you trust or don't trust, but other people trust, they're considered important. How do they feel?
Yeah. And it's all rigged. Like the thing that I always point to is like, you'll wait for earnings, right?
Yeah.
And people will speculate, are earnings going to be good or bad and whatever. And, you know, the stock goes up or down. And then they'll be like, oh, you know, Microsoft beat earnings by 10 times. They made 10 times the money they were supposed to. Stock will drop. I'm like, why? They made 10 times the money they were supposed to. Are you fucking kidding me? But then like the opposite will be true too. If they're like, oh, they lost a bunch of money, stock up. Like it's really all just rigged. And like the people that are on the floor of Wall Street know how to manipulate all that stuff to make sure they make money every day, whether it's going up or down. And so it never really does what it's supposed to. It just does what those people make it do.
Right. And there's a good point there, is that the people who are in charge of your money make money no matter what happens to you. For the most part, aside from fiduciaries who have flat fees, right? Like, they're not really incentivized for your success outside of the marketing of that. And honestly, most common investors aren't playing with enough money to really make a difference for them. You know, they'll have some pocket people they really care about. So,
yeah, that's also the key, is like, so I subscribe to Benzinga, stock. I guess they're all options picks. And the types of things they'll do is sell a put of this one stock for $50 and then buy a put for $52 or whatever. It's like a $3 differential.
Yeah.
And they'll be like,
okay,
this will net you a 20 cents credit per share or something, because it's like buying insurance basically. And so if you had $1 billion, you could turn that around and make, a few million every time you do this weird insurance buying thing. That's pretty safe, because it's but me having a couple thousand to invest is okay, you made $100. Okay, well, if I do that 400 billion times, I'll have some money, but this is kind of silly. So, yeah.
Well, I wish you were a programmer so you could write some automated script that did that for you.
I'm too scared to do that.
Yeah, because all of a sudden one bug or mistake.
Yeah.
Or it just doesn't work one time and you're like, oh shit, I just lost 10 grand.
Yeah.
That matters.
Anyway.
Okay.
Let's move into some more whatnot here. We've touched on some other whatnot. I guess this all was whatnot because it was all finance stuff, but sold your Rivian. That's good. Did you sell it to someone on Twitter?
Yeah, I just did it on Twitter. I was like, tweet me a price and you win and I trust you. I'll just send you the car. And then just send me money when you have it or something.
Hmm. So Elon tweeted you and said, I'll take one.
Yes, exactly. I'm pretty sure he is privy to early models of anything he wants. No, I utilize a site called carsandbids.com by Doug DeMuro, I believe is how you say his name, right? You may have seen his videos before where he's reviewing cars and he's like, this is a 2023 Rivian R1S. And then geeks out about cars in general.
So did he do that for your car?
So the listing always has Doug's notes at the top, and he does this, all caps, ... ellipses into, whatever. So you get the same thing in your mind.
Love it.
Yeah, I sold it on there versus something like Bring a Trailer or whatever, because that tends to have a lot more collector cars and stuff. And this tends to have just I don't know, all over the place. I've seen a 1981 Golf or Rabbit on there before, just all kinds of weird things. There was one thing I shared with my brothers recently. It was a smart car that had been super tuned for racing and stuff, because they're real light, so you can do a bunch with it. You know, so for $3,700, you could have this cool, nimble, little racy thing. I don't know. It's a cool sight.
Like a golf cart that you could crash and die.
Yes, exactly. Now you know where I'm going. Yeah, so sold it on that site. Actually had a number of local people still want to come check it out and bid and whatever as well. So worked out. Got the Rivian. Wife doesn't like it. It's kind of a big trucky thing, and I get that. It definitely has that feel to it. And I think it's good. It's going to go to someone who camps more, already has the truck, loves it. Mm. So now spouse is going to have the same car. So yeah, good for them.
Yeah. Whenever we get to move finally, which hopefully is sometime soon.
No, never. You're the only one that had a Middleburg farm dream. That's the problem.
Okay, so no, that's not true, because we've had 20 or more showings and just no offers. And maybe we're asking too much and fine, whatever. But I'm always of the opinion of whether we accept the offer or not, why don't you just send an offer?
Yeah.
It can be really low. How do you know what we actually might take unless you ask? Mm. So that's just frustrating to me.
I'm going to submit a very low offer after this podcast. See what happens.
Well,
I'm willing to move for 400,000. I want 10 acres and barns and whatever crap you have, a bunch of yard.
Yeah, we would not accept that. But yeah, so it's just it's frustrating. So we've also been there's someone that's supposedly offering. And so let me take you back to the beginning of this. This is a long saga. So they first looked at the house in January And I don't know if they, I can't remember if they said they were interested then or not, or just kind of sat on it. And so then, like, I think it was February or March, they like reached out and they were like, hey, we want to do a second walkthrough, like come look at the house again, whatever. I'm like, all right, that's fine. Like, must mean you're interested and probably want to make an offer. And they're like, yeah, after we come do the second walkthrough, like, we're probably going to submit an offer if like everything looks pretty good. And like, you'll have an offer tomorrow is basically what they said. So they come do the walkthrough, whatever. No offer comes through. We're like, okay, it's been a couple of days since you said we'd have an offer tomorrow. Like, what's going on? And they're like, actually, we want to do like some inspections, like pre-offer inspections. And I was like, is that a thing? Like, aren't you supposed to just do an offer and then be like, it's contingent on these inspections or whatever, just so that we can like, because it seems dumb to me to do it pre-offer, because if you want to offer way less or you want to have some weird like condition in your offer that we don't like and we just decline it, then you've wasted everyone's time by like doing this inspection and holding it up. So I was like, whatever, you can do it. Like, we don't have any other offers right now, so let's do it. And so they did that and they were like, all right, everything looked great on the inspection. Like, we're good. We're going to send you an offer tomorrow. Tomorrow comes. They go, just kidding. We want to do now a septic and well inspection. So I'm like, all right, do that. So they do that like a week later. And they're like, all right, everything looked great on that. We're going to send you an offer tomorrow. Spoiler alert, they did not send us an offer tomorrow. So they were like, oh, actually, so like everything's good now. The realtor has written the offer, but we want to have an attorney review the offer. So their attorney is like looking at the offer. He had like some court cases for a couple of days, couldn't look at it. They couldn't meet with him, blah, blah, blah. Still no offer. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, just send it over and make it contingent on whatever you're worried about. Like, stop doing this whole dance.
Yeah, like, on top of that, are they going to like lowball you? Like, oh, we've really drug this out.
I would assume.
Yeah, you got to think. Like, those people are a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And I know that like buying a home is a long, large life commitment and all of that kind of stuff. But like anybody who like pushes the boundaries.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, this isn't going to go well.
But extra context. So it is not a long life decision for them. They're paying all cash. And they are keeping their home in McLean. So they're very wealthy. So to me, I'm like, what is the point of any of this? Because, okay, yes, I understand you don't want to get a house that sucks. Like if it's going to fall down tomorrow or something, you should know that. But like if you're super wealthy and there's, oh, this thing's damaged, it's going to cost $5,000. Who cares? Like,
yeah.
Just make us an offer. Like, it's super frustrating.
Robbie, that's not how they got rich, okay?
That's true. They've been clipping coupons every night.
Yep.
And going and getting the manager's specials at everything. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, like, the things that count and matter can differ. But, well, hopefully you get something at some point.
Yeah. Still waiting. We'll see.
Mm.
It's been a few days since the attorney's been supposedly reviewing it, so.
Yeah, he needs time also.
Yeah.
You're like, can you just hint
at... And we're almost at the weekend now, and he's just not going to work over the weekend, so it'll be another week, but we'll see.
No, that's not what I understand the career of lawyers is about, okay?
Yeah, it's about spending as much time as possible to charge you as many dollars as possible.
Yeah, yeah. I reviewed this offer, which is usually like a one-sheeter for the most part, give or take, I think, like one, two pages.
Yeah, a few pages maybe, but...
It's taking me 8 hours.
Yeah.
At $1,000 an hour. So.
Yeah, I'm reading one letter per minute. It's going to take a while.
But I'm going to nickel and dime you about your $5,000 repair. But otherwise, I paid this lawyer $8,000 to look at this.
Yeah, that is hilarious. Yeah, you know, yeah. Paid this lawyer $15,000, all said and done. We're going to need you to give us $2,000 back.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Like- okay. Yeah, can I escape? You're trying to escape the country. Not like the country as in the United States, but like, you know, urban versus yeah. The country, like, you know, Barnes and,
yeah.
And.
And just logistically, like we have trips we're trying to plan and stuff. And we're like, are we going to live here or not? Like, just tell us if you want to move in soon so that we can live our lives. Like, this is infuriating.
Yes. Well, good luck to you. I'm going to give you that. There's one other point here in the whatnot that I think we want to slightly touch on, and that is the whole, our mentors, our guiding light, the Syntax podcast, the most popular podcast in tech.
The sages of JavaScript.
The sages of podcasting about JavaScript.
That's true.
And tech things. I just want to touch base on that they're now employees of Sentry, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. If they get salaried to podcast or if there was just a big buyout amount initially and it's kind of like free.
Why not both?
For them afterwards or yeah, maybe both.
Yeah, I would think both. I would think there's like a flat, like you are perpetually sponsored by us, but also maybe like you're paid by us and you'll do things. I mean, right? Like has to be, well, I don't know. Maybe we need to ask Scott and Wes again.
Mm-hmm.
How that all works, the semantics of that and what they want to share, what we could talk about on here. But it is a very interesting thing as a tech podcaster. Theirs is way more serious than ours, but they have a permanent home with Sentry. Good for them. Good product.
Yeah.
Into that. We'll just see, like, where's it going to go? Is it just going to keep being great or the whole of the thing or I don't know.
Yeah.
That's an interesting prospect.
To my knowledge, I don't know of any other JavaScript podcasts or web development, if you want to generalize it, that have been bought.
Right.
So it's like, it's a new thing that, I mean, none of the others are anywhere near as popular. It's like, I forget the exact numbers, but if you look at like, even we are more popular than the ones that are so-called popular. Like if you look based on reviews and, and numbers and whatever.
Okay.
But their reviews are like, let's say Shop Talk, which I would have thought was like, second or pretty high.
Yeah.
They have maybe, you know, 50 reviews or whatever. And then like they have Syntax has, you know, 700 5-star reviews or whatever. And it's like
Right. So you
it's orders of magnitude higher, but I'm not really sure how or why.
And I would say like it's probably like 2% of listeners actually review. Like I would feel like right. a very low percentage, right?
I ask our listeners every episode to review and they never do it. So if you're listening to this right now, you should review. Leave us, even if it's a bad review, honestly, just get the like, don't make it too bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, give us an honest review.
Well, let me say this. If you're my friend, if you're actually my friend, I've probably asked you to review.
Yeah. And you probably didn't do it.
And you might not have done it. So can you just do it now? That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks. Bye. And it gives us your names, whether you reviewed or not. So, you know, I know who I'm cutting out of my Christmas card list.
Well, they're screen names.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are obvious, you know.
Yeah.
Porsche guy, 83911. Guess what? I know which one you are. So... Yeah, so that being like such a small chunk of, and that just goes to show, yeah, like from a popularity standpoint. And, you know, you talk about Shop Talk specifically, right? Chris had CSS Tricks, and that was acquired.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want the podcast to.
Right.
Maybe that was on the table and he didn't take it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Other interesting questions. So I think in our realm, this is a first.
Yeah.
Where someone has actually had their like marketing media property acquired.
So... I think the difference here, and not to like shit on anyone, is we and like Shop Talk, I feel like are very similar in that we kind of just jump on and chat.
Mm-hmm.
And like Syntax, I feel like Wes spends like a day planning out the episode, writing all the notes, like making it nice production.
That can't be right.
Like a good podcast.
No, that can't be right.
Maybe not a day, but like more time than we spend.
More work does not mean more success. That's not the American dream. This is bullshit.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that like they already were very popular. So is Chris. Like Chris Coyer, very popular. But like when you're very popular and you also produce a like world-class podcast that's very planned out and meticulous, it's going to be even more popular than just because the people like Chris gets a lot of people to listen to him just because he's him.
Mm.
And like, we're not popular, so we don't get many people from that. But like, you know, when you're very popular and you do like a super planned out, well-edited, well-written up podcast, it's going to do really well. So that's what I think the difference is. Not that Shop Talk isn't good. Shop Talk is great. I listen to it all the time. I will continue to listen to it. I'm just saying that like,
right.
I think that's the difference.
I think Chris just unsubscribed right now. I could feel it in the ether.
He doesn't listen to this. Chris, have you listened to this ever and happened to hear this one episode? I'm sorry. And I'm not saying bad things about you. Like, I really like, I think you're a very interesting person.
Well, he's going to render. He's one of the speakers.
So we can. Oh, right. So we'll see him at the black tie dinner.
I am going to message him and say, are you doing this? I got to know.
I mean, all the speakers are invited to the VIP dinner, so I'm not sure if they're going. Like,
yeah.
I want the response of, do I actually need a tuxedo or can it be a very nice black suit? Because, like, they don't look that different at the end of the day, mm-hmm. unless you're going to enforce the, like, I need a vest maybe, or like a
my tux doesn't have a vest.
Bow tie.
Yeah, bow tie, yes. Bow tie, yes. Maybe if you bow tie, that's plenty. I mean, so the description they link to says specifically like tux, jacket, and pants.
Yeah.
So the pants are very distinct, and you can have tuxes with different lapels, right? You don't have to have a shawl collar or whatever else. So, you know, black suit can kind of get away there. The pants, though, don't have the like silk stripe down.
So this is my problem, though. It is.
Are you going to have shiny shoes? Shiny shoes would help you.
It's going to be June.
Yeah.
In Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
So what I want to wear is, if it's a suit, I want a Ministry of Supply breathable Japanese fabric nice suit. Mm. And like, if I can make that 90% look like a tux, do I count? Or are you really going to turn me away for being like, I see that you don't have the shiny strip down the pants. You've got to get out of here.
Yeah, like, yeah. I have those things. I just don't fit in them.
Yeah.
So I wonder if in like 4 weeks I can.
Maybe.
I'm afraid to try. That's.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That's part of it. I took a drink of Diet Coke. I'm not like an alcoholic who, well, I mean, I am, but I'm not like one of those that hiccups like that whole.
Not
like,
in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole stereotypical like, I'm drunk. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So yeah. Just want to give that some context.
On that note, we're over time here. So
womp womp.
Thanks everyone for listening. If you liked it, please hit that follow button, subscribe, and listen to future episodes. Leave us ratings and reviews, and we will catch you next time.
Boom, 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 boom. Thanks for listening to Whiskey Web and Whatnot. This podcast is brought to you by Shipshape and produced by Podcast Royale. If you like this episode, consider sharing it with a friend or two and leave us a rating, maybe a review, as long as it's good.
You can subscribe to future episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more info about Shipshape and this show, check out our website at shipshape.io.